Are you distracted by your phone and technology? Do you want to reclaim your attention from your digital devices? That's what we're going to talk about today with What's Up with Dr. Jed on Your Life in Process. This week on the podcast, we are talking about something that most folks are struggling with right now, including me, which is our digital distraction. I actually caught myself the other day on a run on the beach where I was listening to a book, taking pictures, and then opening my notes section to take notes. And I stopped and realized how I was missing out on the whole experience of the beach. So many of us are missing out on our lives because we're distracted by our phones. And we're actually not doing as good of a job at work or in our relationships because we can't seem to keep our attention in one place. Today, Dr. Jed is going to share with you the behavioral neuroscience behind your distraction and what you can do about it. Stay tuned to the end because I'm going to bring in a process-based and ACT perspective where we'll talk about some of the processes that underlie our attention and concrete strategies that you can use this week to reclaim it. I'll see you on the other side. As a therapist, sometimes I need to refer clients to a higher level of care. And until now, it's been difficult to find programs that are evidence-based and holistic in their approach. And that's why I'm so excited to be sponsored by Lightfully Behavioral Health. Lightfully is a leader in primary mental health treatment, providing high-quality, evidence-based programming, and their mission is to change lives compassionately. They treat a wide variety of diagnoses, including mood disorders, anxiety disorders, trauma-related disorders, and personality disorders. And Lightfully is one of the first and only behavioral health organizations that is built around process-based therapy, which is a clearly defined framework that delivers more personalized and holistic care. The company's seasoned all-female executive team brings over 70 years of experience and a proven track record of success in the mental health market. For more information, go visit lightfully.com.
If I don't introduce him, he will Zoom bomb us. So, Samson.
Oh, hi, Samson.
Right. Did you get your screen time?
Oh my gosh. See?
Okay. So if you're going to hang out, you can sit on the pillow, but not climb on the computer while we're doing this. Okay.
So I take this is your home office.
Yeah. Yeah.
This, okay.
Here's
unless you bring your cat to work every day.
Yeah.
What did you say his name was?
Samson.
Samson.
Yeah. The other one is Julian of Norwich. Because Julian of Norwich was a Christian saint who apparently had a cat.
Okay. So that links to your wife working and studying biblical studies, huh? She's...
Yes.
That's her expertise. Oh, what interesting conversations you must have.
Oh, yeah. We have great ones.
Speaking of distraction, why you just were distracted by your cats, you're back. And this week, you have lots of distractors available to you. But we were going to talk about distraction because it feels like it's another thing that's on the rise for folks. And certainly, there's probably aspects of habits and neuroscience and mindfulness that can be helpful for us in terms of our distractibility. So go for it, Dr. Jed. Why did you want to talk about distraction?
Well, I think in modern day, there's this term, the attention economy. You've probably heard that. I'm sure many have, where, it's more and more expensive, literally, to get people's attention. And if you can get people's attention, you can sell them things. So I think that's probably where a lot of economies are driven from, based on consumerism. And so whether somebody's consuming social media content or ads to, buy things or whatever, there are a lot of incentives for companies to get people's attention, whether it's a billboard that they're driving by or it's a ad that they're scrolling through on Instagram. And I think more and more that people are understanding the behavioral neuroscience that underlies attention and awareness. And so they can capitalize on that and make these things even slicker and better at capturing people's attention. So, you know, if we don't pay attention to this, we're not going to see how we are just going to be constantly pushed and pulled by others. And I'm not sure about you, but I don't want to live that way. It's not how I want to live my life. I want to, even if it's an illusion of control, I want to at least have the illusion of being in control to some degree. So that's why I thought it would be a good topic to talk about, because it's only increasing. And, you know, it's not just, I don't want to be a doomsdayer and say, oh, this is only getting worse and we have no control over it. We do have the ability to be able to work with it. And that's what we can talk about as well.
Wonderful. So we may not have control over our attention being captured when it's sort of done covertly, subconsciously. And I actually interviewed Prince Guman, who wrote the book Blindsight. It's written by a neuroscientist and a marketer. And they talked all about how our attention is being captured. Everything by, you know, contrast, how much contrast is used to capture our attention versus the speed at which things go by. It's very nuanced. And where I see distraction more with my clients is, say I'm working with a college student and they're sitting down and they're trying to write a paper and they have about 5 to 10 minutes where they can start writing before they're off to click on this, check this, be on their phone with this, respond to that, where there's almost, it's too much opportunity to play in these different places that are kind of all in within your home screen, right? And I actually even worked on a client once where one of her goals was to not be on her phone while she was watching a show with her boyfriend.
the bar gets very low. Yeah,
it was like, okay, yeah, that can be one of our goals, like just one media use at a time, right? So that's also another challenge. I mean, I think there's the reading news and kind of getting distracted by the headlines, but then there's also I actually have an objective here that I want to meet. I want to get through writing this thing or doing my taxes or whatever it is, and I can't stick with it.
Yeah. So this is where technology has really excelled. You know, I think Cornel West put it, you know, these weapons of mass distraction, because we have these devices constantly with us. And often people, you know, they even get the fear when they can't find their phone. Oh no, you know, like my life is going to end. But it's just because we're so conditioned to be so dependent on these, and feel conditioned to be dependent on them because they are basically intermittent reinforcement machines. So especially if we have our beeps and alerts set up, you know, the worst case, we'd have it set up for Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, you know, you can imagine all the social media as well as email, texting, and then what the thing was actually built for, which is phone calls. But nobody gets phone calls these days, so you can even leave that aside. But the intermittent reinforcement piece is we never know when we're going to get a text. We never know when we're going to get an email. Never know when somebody's going to respond to our post. And every time we do that, our brain says, oh, information, you got to go check that. And so our survival mechanism kicks in that says, I don't know who texted. I need to check. And so suddenly our phone is burning a hole in our pocket or our purse or whatever. And we just can't pay attention to what we're doing because we've got to go check. So these are designed to distract us, and designed because they know that intermittent reinforcement is the strongest type of learning. It's really, really hard to resist, to the point where texting now has been shown to be more dangerous than drunk driving, which is pretty darn dangerous.
And during the pandemic, we had to rely on these tools so much more. I was actually talking with another mom over the weekend, and we were just talking about how all the wonderful hygiene we had pre-pandemic around our technology for ourselves and for our kids, and how much the pandemic just kind of ruined it for all of us. Because now, you know, our kids are used to being on screens for 8 hours. So what's the difference if now they're just on it for 2 hours? It's not that bad, right? And same with us, where, you know, we just kind of developed this sort of like slide into more phone use, more technology use. And I would say what goes along with that is a feeling of dissatisfaction. I can feel it for myself. I feel less connected, less satisfied. My downtime, if I'm using my downtime on technology versus using my downtime out in the garden digging, it feels different. And I think that that's something that I'm also hearing about and seeing more of, is that people are feeling worse the more distracted they are and the more that they're using. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, your ideas around how we can shift this, and also what's intermittent reinforcement, what's hooking us. How do we do something different?
Yeah. So the first thing, well, it's all about awareness. So the bottom line is, you know, if people don't remember anything else from this podcast, just remember awareness. Awareness must be present to win, as the saying goes. So if we don't know that we're feeling worse because of this, right, we just might be feeling down and we're not making the connection between that and the endless scroll on our phone. You know, we have to see that. We have to see it very clearly. And so it starts with really, you know, just seeing, like, what are we getting from whatever we're being distracted by? And we can start, let's go right to the heart of it. There's so many people that are really, they really believe that multitasking is okay and is the way to go. And they want to believe the myth. It's kind of like this myth of willpower. It's like, oh, if I just had more willpower, I'd be able to do all these things that I can't do. You know, willpower is definitely more myth than muscle. I write a lot about that in my Unwinding Anxiety book. You know, if you could just think yourself out of anxiety, that would it'd be great. I would gladly find another job. But that's not how our brains work. And so, you know, with whether it's multitasking or scrolling on our news feed or on our social media feed or whatever, really paying attention and seeing what we're getting from it. You know, when I try to multitask, it's really important for me to see very clearly how, one, whatever I was supposed to be paying attention to, let's say I'm on a meeting on Zoom, then I'm checking my email at the same time. I miss out on the meeting. I feel less connected. I feel like, oh no, did I miss something? And if I say something, will they know that I was multitasking? And that's just exhausting, where I, you know, and checking my emails doesn't really get me farther along. You know, I could easily, if there are emails that I'm just going to delete, I could do that in 5 seconds after the meeting. And if it's an email that I need to respond to, I need to devote full attention to that so that I am efficient and effective in whatever that response is. So I'm neither efficient or effective on the meeting, nor am I with whatever I'm multitasking with. And it's really important to see, what am I getting from this? Oh, this is actually making things worse. I feel exhausted after multitasking. So really paying attention is critical for breaking out of these habits of you know, distraction. And seeing all the ways that we can get distracted is a, you know, is a good place to be able to start to be able to step out of them. Oh, you know, as an example, I was working, I had a resident physician that was training with me, and she described how she had two small kids and she literally woke up from a daydream or from a daze, more like it, when her kids were sitting at the dining room table eating dinner and she was standing away from the table checking her newsfeed, and she woke up to this daze because it was automatic. She's like, what am I doing? I'm not spending time with my kids. You know, I like eating dinner with my kids. And she was just so, she'd gotten so caught up in the news cycle that she didn't even notice that she was doing it. So we've got to notice, and then we've got to notice what we're getting from it. So she, for example, noticed that this was the last thing she wanted to do was to be spending time checking her newsfeed when she didn't really need to, because she'd probably checked it 10 minutes before. And she wanted to spend time with her kids. You know, kids grow fast. So seeing how unrewarding whatever the distraction is that we're doing is really the key to breaking that as a habit. And I go way into detail about why that's the case, you know, back to the 70s, you know, and in probably in the Unwinding Anxiety books, the easiest place if somebody wants to get into the details. But basically, there's a huge amount of neuroscience showing that the only way to break a habit is to see how unrewarding it is, right? We become disenchanted. And then the next step is to really see, well, what's it like when I think of it as unitasking, you know, what happens when we just truly pay attention when we're on the meeting and we notice boredom or we notice restlessness and we get curious about that. In those moments, we do two things. One is we stay present in the meeting, and two, we can see the habitual processes of our mind and notice that we don't have to act on them. It's kind of like this, you know, let's say we have poison ivy and we have this urge to scratch it. And if we notice the urge and we get curious about what itching feels like, that curiosity itself can be a balm that helps us not automatically scratch. And we know, oh, if I don't scratch, it'll go away faster. And it will go away. The itching always goes away, even if we do scratch, but much faster if we don't. So here, you know, we can bring awareness and notice what's better than scratching that itch of checking social media or, you know, being just doing the distraction thing. And I have to say, when I am immersed in something that I'm doing, there are a few things that feel better, you know? And so when we really notice that, like, well, what's it like when I put away all my distractions? Boy, feels really good to just immerse myself in what I'm doing. And what that highlights is it's not about getting rid of distractions. It's really about seeing how our mind works so that we can effectively work with it, so that we can be so skilled at this and see how much better it feels to notice the distractions and not scratch that itch, so we can have our phone right next to us and notice it bing or ping. I mean, ideally, I certainly wouldn't recommend people having all their alerts on. That's just not necessary. No email is that important. If it's really important, they'd probably call us. But we can have these things, our weapons of mass distraction, right next to us and have them no longer be weaponized against us.
So Anna Lemke, who's an addiction psychiatrist at Stanford, you're familiar mm-hmm. with her. I had a conversation with her, and what she talks about is two things. One is the sort of the detox, and then the second is the self-binding. So detox is actually just quitting. Like, I'm not mm-hmm. going to allow myself to be on Instagram at all, or I'm going to not have email on my phone. I'm only going to have it, you know, on my computer, or do it at certain times of the day. And I think there's actually a benefit to that of doing some detox of some things so that you can start to pay attention to your mind. I mean, that's what basic meditation is, mm-hmm. is you're sitting with your mind without other distractions to see how your mind works. And then the self-binding aspect of it is actually helping yourself out environmentally so that you don't have those bings and pings and, you know, all of that. But ultimately, we do live in a world of mass distraction. And so mm-hmm. we need to be able to learn how to operate in the world, notice when our attention is getting pulled away, or notice that urge to check, and then redirect our attention back. And I do think that's a skill that we can develop over time, as you're talking about. But maybe in the beginning, it's helpful to do things like when you get home from work, plug your phone in your, you know, in another room, and then have dinner with your kids. Don't have the phone on the counter where you're just going to be in that automatic patterning to be able to break some of this patterning up.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's a really good progression, you know, and for some people, they've just got to detox. That's the only way to start to get a handle on it. And even if they can't detox, they can still learn. You know, I think we all can learn. If we're like, oh, I'm in the middle of scrolling again, we can pause and ask ourselves, what am I getting from this? So that we start to build that disenchantment. The self-binding piece, I think, you know, can also be a helpful middle step. But as you're pointing out, we can't drop ourselves onto a desert island and suddenly not have any more email, because we'd probably get fired from our jobs or whatever if we have to email as part of our jobs, as most of us do. So I think having the full spectrum and being able to follow, you know, that, like, how do I start detox for a bit? Even if I can't detox, you know, explore, you know, map this out. What am I getting from this? So we build the disenchantment, and then eventually start to learn what freedom tastes like. You know, oh, this is what it's like when my phone doesn't have control over me. What does that feel like? You know, this is what it's like when I'm fully present in a conversation. This is what it's like when I'm fully present with my family. You know, it's like, there are a few things that are more rewarding than that.
And you're really pointing to the reinforcement being from the inside there. So the feeling it in your body, staying with it, lingering on, this is what it feels like when I'm engaging in the way that I want to be engaging with the world. And that's what will help us do that behavior again, repeatedly over and over again.
I was just going to say, I'm glad you're highlighting that, because external reinforcers, we become habituated to them. So we need more and more and more. With internal things like connection or kindness, they only get stronger the more we practice them, because they feel so good. So I just want to highlight, they're totally different. And one builds in a negative way where it gets us sucked in more and more because it's external and we become habituated. And the other builds in a positive way where we only see how wonderful it feels to be connected. And so we connect even more.
If you are a mental health practitioner, join me at PESI for their Body Image Summit, helping every body find peace with food and weight, on February 24th and 25th. And then I'm offering a workshop with Praxis Continuing Education that's 4 Tuesdays in March. So you can join me there. You can check these all out on my event page at drdianahill.com. One of the things I started doing during COVID was taking this African dance class. My girlfriend's an African dance teacher, and she teaches down at the beach in Santa Barbara. And on Sunday mornings, and I'll tell you, pretty much every Sunday, I'm like, oh, I've got too much to do. Sundays are my day to like catch up from the week. But I go. And part of what makes me go is that internal, that reinforcement of knowing what I'm going to feel like when I'm there and what I'm going to feel like after. And actually, I come back and I'm way more productive because I've done this thing. But, you know, I think about that for you because you've talked about being a surfer, which is such a good example. You can't really have your phone when you're surfing. You can't be working when you're surfing. And it's such, and you have to be so in the moment. And I'm wondering if that influences your work, like having these times, these breaks, when we're totally immersed in something that's not related to work, sometimes it can help our work.
Oh, absolutely. So I have to say, my lab, they can kind of tell, you know, when I've gone surfing before work, you know, because I come into the office and they're like, have you been surfing? You know, it's probably that huge grin on my face that totally gives it away every time. It's a great way to start the day. And like you're pointing out, it's a very physical meditation where, you know, must be present to catch the wave, because otherwise, you know, you'll miss it or it'll come and clobber you on the head. So there are real consequences to not being present. And there's something about connecting with nature that also is just really spiritually, it just kind of fills my tank, so to speak. And so that, and also, you know, it's amazing just to not, you know, because our thinking brain isn't nearly as good as the rest of our brain at doing, you know, doing things. And so if I'm struggling with a scientific question or a way to write a grant proposal or a paper, it can be really helpful to take a break and go surfing and let all of that stuff organize itself in my head subconsciously. And then I come back and it's just like, you know, there it is.
Yeah, I think Cal Newport talks about that in terms of this sort of productive meditation where you go for a run and your kind of mind is working on it, but you're not in that focused state of working on it. It's much more, so it's actually more default mode network. Is that right? That you, when you're in that mind wandering state, is that what's happening?
Well, I think, so the default mode network certainly is activated when our mind is wandering. Yet, you know, some of the research that my lab and other labs have suggested is that network may be, at least one part of it, like the posterior cingulate cortex, may be activated when we're caught up in our experience. And so I think you can differentiate mind wandering and awareness of mind wandering versus mind wandering and being caught up in the mind wandering. And when there's mind wandering and being caught up, that's the default mode network. And that's what we default to when we're not trained to pay attention to our minds, which is why, you know, in most studies, when you look at mind wandering and default mode network activity, there, you know, there's activity when we're mind wandering because we're caught up in it, you know, whether it's daydreaming or whatever. Yet we, our mind can be wandering, you know, like you're pointing out, and we can be aware of it, which is important because one, we can notice when there's a tendency to think, oh, there's the world's greatest idea. And then we get caught up in it and we miss looking at it objectively. And two, sometimes when we're so caught up in one idea, we can't have the space for other ideas to come up. And ideally, you know, it's about really being open to all possibilities, being creative, exploring, you know, what all possibilities are. That's when we're most likely to find the best solution to a problem, for example.
So it's really that distinction between creativity versus rumination. And they're one sort of more of an open-minded creative state, and the other is more kind of just going around and around on the sort of more closed-minded topic.
That's a great way of putting it, that distinction.
Okay. So certainly surfing, dancing, being outside, all those things, I think, foster the first kind, the creative mind-wandering state. It gives your mind a little bit of a break in a different way than trying to give your mind a break by like just going to all different types of apps on your phone or, you know. So just sort of closing up this segment, what are some takeaways you want folks to have around this age of distraction?
I think takeaway number one would be just notice how often, how much, and how we're distracted. Like, what is it that pulls our attention away? Is it something that was designed to catch our attention on social media? Is it something where we've trained ourselves or we've gotten in the habit of when we're bored to go to some distraction because the boredom is uncomfortable and it triggers that? You know, it's really hard. I think a lot of folks have just not learned distress tolerance because, or have unlearned it even, because we have these weapons of mass distraction. So when we're, you know, we're sitting at a stoplight, you know, and suddenly, you know, if it's at night, you can look around and you see everybody's crotch glowing blue because it's like they can't just sit for 30 seconds while a red light is red. They've got to be checking their phones. So just noticing, you know, what it is that triggers us. And then the other takeaway would be just noticing how it feels when we're sucked into a distraction so that we can become disenchanted with it. And then I guess the third thing would be a noticing. Again, it comes back to awareness, noticing what it feels like to just fully be present in a conversation with somebody, for example, or working on a task or just going for a walk. You know, like what's it like to just leave our phone at home and just go for a walk, you know, even if it's, we don't have to be in nature. It could just be, you know, if we live in an urban setting, just walking and listening to the sounds of the neighborhood.
Or just leave your phone at home and go to the grocery store.
Yes.
What's going to go wrong when you're at the grocery store without your phone? You'll survive.
Yeah.
It is kind of getting past that. There's a yoga teacher, Michael Stone, that I study, who talks about impatience, and he talks about how impatience is our inability to be with our body and let it, you know, just sort of be with ourselves in our bodies, right? And the greater that we have the ability to be with our bodies, the more patient we become. And it is a skill that we've lost because it's so quickly that we can escape our bodies or escape the moment, but it is a skill we can begin to cultivate. And there may be a little bit of discomfort, especially as you're moving into a state of flow. If you are getting into a state of flow, sometimes there's that little bit of like, oh, this is uncomfortable, but I'm going to stick with it. Yeah. And then I can feel the flow state, which is a wonderful state to be in.
For sure.
Okay, Dr. Jed, I will see you again next month. We'll all see you again next month. Thank you so much for taking your time with us today.
My pleasure.
So today, Dr. Jed talked about the role of the attention economy in our digital distraction. Your attention is being purchased, and we need to get a little bit more skillful at choosing when and how we give it away. If you are distracted by your phone and your digital devices, it's not your fault. And as Paul Gilbert would say, it is your responsibility to do something different. Dr. Jed shared how you can look at your habit loops and start to see how dissatisfying and inefficient you are when you are distracted, and then start to create a new habit loop where you practice monotasking and paying attention to your task at hand, and notice how much better it feels to be in your life rather than distracted from it. Your attention is one of the key main areas that can contribute to your mental health. Having flexible attention means that you are able to direct your attention where you want it to go. And it's a very important process in being productive at work, in having meaningful and connected relationships, as well as being able to respond to pain. For example, if you're having intense emotional pain, it's helpful to be able to direct your attention towards that pain, direct your attention away from that pain when it's necessary, and move back and forth. The opposite of having flexible attention is having either rigid attention or scattered attention. So rigid attention is something like you are so caught up in texting someone that you don't even see the person that you are at coffee with across the way from you, right? Scattered attention is something like you can't sit down and get through your work project or your housework because you keep on moving from one thing to the next. With rigid attention, you can get really stuck somewhere. And with scattered attention, you never get anywhere. So there's some ACT processes that can help you develop more flexible attention. And that's what I want to offer you today for this week's daily practice. The first process is mindfulness and being present. A lot of us know about mindfulness at this point in time, but it's actually the practice of it that strengthens your attention, sort of like exercise. We all know that exercise is good for us, but are we actually doing it? So for mindfulness, one of the really simple ways to train your brain to be mindful, sort of like you train a puppy to heal, is to pick a few tasks that you're going to commit to be mindful in on a daily basis. You can have a formal mindfulness practice where you're doing mindfulness of the breath. I have a great simple mindfulness of the breath practice for you up on Insight Timer if you want to check that out. But I also like other types of mindfulness practices, like when Larry Ward shared about he practices gratitude in the shower where he just pays attention to shower on his skin. I also like interpersonal mindfulness practices where you make a commitment to be fully present with another person, be mindful, not in your own head and not on your phone, with them for a short period of time. Something like at the dinner table with somebody or in a conversation out to coffee with someone. Could you practice being mindful for that short period of time? The second process that could be really helpful for you in reclaiming your attention is an ACT process called cognitive diffusion. So one of the things that can distract us is our own minds. You may be doing something and your mind will say, I better check my phone and see if that person emailed me back. Or, I wonder how many followers that picture got on Instagram. Try noticing that your mind is pulling your attention away from you and not actually following what your mind says to do. What if you were to notice your mind's distracting thoughts and then reorient your attention to what you are doing without acting on them? Then you become more flexible with your attention and you get to choose, not your mind, whether or not you're going to go in and check that Instagram post or the news feed or whatever it is that your mind is telling you is so crucial to look at. Oftentimes, it's not that crucial to look at. And then third, committed action. So the process of committed action is you setting your goals and your boundaries around your technology use based on your values and then carrying it out. And some of the things that can be really helpful for you with committed action is actually just structuring your environment. I talked with Dr. Jed about Anna Lemke's work of using self-binding and digital detoxes. Self-binding is really helpful with our devices early on. Some of the ways that I practice self-binding are things like I put my phone on focus mode during sleep, where I only have access to two apps while I'm sleeping. The two apps are Insight Timer if I want to listen to a sleep meditation, or my notes section if I wake up and I have a worry and I want to write something down. So those are the two things that I have access to between 9:30 at night and 6:30 in the morning. And that way I will be able to do my meditation in the morning and not get on my email before I meditate. The other thing is just structuring your environment physically so that your phone is not always accessible to you. Plug it in another room during dinner, put it in a drawer, keep it plugged in your bathroom when you sleep. Whatever it is, getting a little physical distance from your phone will help you a lot in being able to maintain whatever your digital goals are. With a digital detox, you may choose to take a month long or a week long or day long, or even just a few hour long break away from your phone or your technology or a certain app. One suggestion that Dr. Jed and I had was go to the grocery store, go for a walk without your phone with you and notice what happens when you take a little detox. You may have a little bit of craving or even a little bit of withdrawal at first, but you're developing that muscle of being able to be without your technology or phone by your side. Okay, so here is your practice for this week. Choose an area of your life where digital distraction is getting in the way of you living out your values. And this is a writing practice. You're going to make a plan and you're going to write it down. And we know that writing things down and making a plan increases the likelihood of you being successful at them. So number one, write down the values that you want to pursue that the digital distraction is interfering with. Number two, write down the new behavior that you want to engage in that aligns with your values. Number three, write down how you plan to structure your environment to support your behavior. Are you going to use that focus mode? Are you going to plug things in a different spot? Are you going to keep your phone somewhere else while you're working? And then number four, track yourself. At the end of the day, you can give yourself something as simple as a 0 to 10 score of how well was I able to stick with my values in the face of digital distraction today? How'd I do? And make adjustments based on the feedback you get from that self-monitoring. Okay, so try it out. Let me know how it works for you. All of these instructions will be in your daily practice, which is linked at the bottom of the show notes. And I look forward to seeing you here next week on Your Life in Process. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Life in Process. When you enter your life in process, when you become psychologically flexible, you become free. If you like this episode or think it would be helpful to somebody, please leave a review over at podchaser.com. If you have any questions, you can leave them for me by phone at 805-457-2776 or by email at podcast@yourlifeinprocess.com. This podcast is for informational and entertainment purposes only and is not meant to be a substitute for mental health treatment.